The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. From hot dogs to cool kitties, this is Dark Side of the Pooch.
Dr. Reb, what you got?
I can't beat that. Why you gotta make me follow that?
Well, I've got four of them right now, so I've got a lot of licking, a lot of growling going on. This is Dark Side the Pooch. He's Dr. Rab Stewart. The Rossbridge Animal Hospital is the place to go for all your pet care. 205-208-0301, 208-0301 at Rossbridge Vet. Rossbridge Vet on Twitter and the Rossbridge Animal Hospital on the Facebook. And, of course, they're right there in Rossbridge, so check them out. Brought to you by Ed's Pet World. I love this place. They've been in business for almost 50 years right down there in Homewood. They just redid all the streets down there, so parking is fantastic. For all your exotic pets, and we got some exotic pet news we'll get into today, check them out. They have alligators, they have tarantulas, they have chinchillas, rabbits. And, of course, they got some of the basic stuff. They got fishes down there. They got turtles. They got the whole nine yards. Check out Ed's Pet World. And Seth travels the United States and probably beyond those borders looking for unopened toys. He's got a great toy closet down there. If you're looking for stuff still in the box, whether it's Star Wars stuff, collectible stuff, vintage stuff, whatever you're looking for, the hard-to-find stuff, check it out at Ed's Pet World and also buy, sell, and trade. How you been there at Rossbridge Animal Hospital? Everything good? Getting ready for a college football season is kicked off officially, and we're getting ready for the month of September. All good with you?
Oh man, it's great. When football's playing, it just kind of gives you something every week, you know, you're kind of working right towards getting to those games. And, this weekend, the first weekend is fine. It's okay. But, you know, it's just that full slate of games. And then you got the holiday.
Just for a brief moment in time, the chaos of the world, the inflation and the terrorism, all that stuff just kind of goes away for a little bit in three-hour blocks, and you can just chill out a little bit. And I absolutely love that. Hey, I love this show, and I love all the shows we do here on TKR. And, of course, download the Tony Curry Radio app, TKR, or check us out on Spotify or wherever you get your podcast, at Tony Curry Radio Podcast. Just Google Tony Curry Radio Podcast, and you can hear all of our shows, including Dark Side of the Pooch. And the show airs now 5 days a week, every single night at 7 o'clock. But we talk about things and then they start happening, which means I know we have our finger on the pulse of what's important when it comes to pet news. And so I wanted to do a little bit of an update on several things we've talked about. Is that cool with you?
Yeah, let's do it.
I asked you the question last week, do you think animals really talk to each other? Now, I know some breeds do, but when I hear a dog bark, it sounds like the same flipping bark over and over and over again. Are they actually talking? And you said, yes, there's a brand new app that was released last week called Meow Talk. It's the product of a growing interest in enlisting additional intelligence, machine learning algorithms to decode animal communication. The idea is not as far-fetched as it may seem. For example, machine learning systems, which are able to extract patterns from large data sets, can distinguish between the squeaks that rodents make when they're happy and those they emit when they are in distress. This is to understand what our cats are saying to us. You take the app, you hold it up to your cat, you record it, it plays back. Sometimes it says, I'm happy, let me rest, nice to see you, get away from me, I'm coughing up a hairball. So this is another way that cats translate. Do you think that's true?
I mean, I don't know how reliable the app is going to be, but I do think that they make different noises based on how they're feeling. And I think that this is really exciting if there is legitimacy to it. You know, this is one of the coolest things that you can think of when it comes to having a pet, you know, is being able to understand what it's saying. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I think people have wanted to do that for, hundreds of years.
Right. I know. The dog app is coming out sometime in September. And it's all in fun and jest. It's not in jest because there's actually algorithms behind this. And obviously with a database of dogs making particular sounds in particular situations, we can kind of figure out what they're actually saying and what cats are saying.
I feel like that we come up with ideas on the show all the time, but really you could take this and just make it super non-scientific and just make an app that has really hilarious and ridiculous sayings.
Well, we could take one of your previous shows. We had you, we asked you, what does a cat sound like when it's horny, or what does a cat sound like when it's angry? And you did all the meows, and I think it was spot on. We could just do that. We could just use you. Right?
Well, yeah, I think so.
If you have a Dr. Rab plushable at your front desk next time I come in there and it makes cat noises and you telling people I'm going to take half the proceeds. Also something we were talking about the difference between emotional support and service animals. And if you want either one of those, what do you have to do to get documentation for that? And obviously you can Google that up. This past weekend, Joey Henney was walking through a very popular Philadelphia water park with his emotional support animal. Do you know what it was?
A chicken.
It was his pet alligator, Wally.
What?
He got Wally from a rescued animal refuge there in Florida in 2015. They're inseparable. Wally's provided comfort for Henny as he's undergone radiation for cancer over the last 3 years. He said Wally's never tried to bite anyone and likes to be pet on the head. And after he repeatedly showed pictures of this alligator in nursing homes, at hospitals, and at daycare centers, he was awarded a emotional support animal certificate. He said it wasn't enough to get a service because in some areas it's illegal to own an alligator. But if you could pull this story up after the show, he sleeps with his alligator. It's four and a half feet long. He sleeps with it. It sleeps on his chair. You got these 93-year-old people holding this this alligator to their neck. It's the craziest thing ever seen. So, yes, you can have emotional support animals. You know, and I wanted to ask you about this because I was watching the How Did It Really Happen series just this weekend about Siegfried and Roy. And, of course, you remember what happened to Roy?
Yeah, he got mauled.
Yeah, he got mauled. Now, he said that he was having a stroke on stage and that the 7-year-old tiger that was one of his best friends actually sensed that he was having a stroke and grabbed him by the neck and was trying to drag him off stage to safety. That's what he said. And How It Really Happened, we've come to find out that their tigers and lions have attacked numerous people over a 30-year phase, to the point where they paralyzed one man, almost killed another, mauled a child. They're still animals. You can take the cheetah out of the jungle, but you can't take the jungle out of the cheetah. Talk about a little bit, because I know you've worked with other exotic animals. You've worked with you know, giraffes and other things. Just talk about the psychology of how people with dangerous exotic pets feel like they have this special connection with this animal that no one else can understand. And you probably see that with dogs and cats, right?
Yeah. I mean, I can understand why people would think that they have a connection. And I think that a lot of times that they do, you know, they think that because they do have a connection with them. And a bond can be formed and trust can be gained, but they're even the most trustworthy animals should still be handled very cautiously when we're talking about exotic animals. And I'm basing this on domesticated animals as well. So, for example, we have dogs and cats all the time that they seem totally fine. And they let you examine them. They let you, you know, be up in their face, looking in their mouth, looking at their eyes and their ears. And then for whatever reason, you go to do something else and they try to bite. And it's not because you're hurting them. I mean, they'll just whip around.
Yeah.
Like maybe they just don't like a certain part of their body examined or touched or whatever. And that, I mean, and they'll turn around and try to take your hand off. And that's just totally unpredictable because you've just, you know, spent 5 minutes looking at another part of their body and mm-hmm. they're happy as they can be. So if a domesticated animal can do that, a domesticated, you know, non-exotic pet can do that, then even more so, you know, these big cats that we were talking about, you know, like Siegfried and Roy have, you know, they have an animal instinct and it can be totally unpredictable.
Yeah, and like Chris Rock said in his stand-up routine, he said everyone was blaming the tiger. He said the tiger went crazy. The tiger didn't crazy. The tiger went tiger. The tiger's a tiger. The tiger was doing what he wanted to do. And obviously, if you know enough about lions and tigers, that when they absolutely win a particular alpha male sorts of situation, which of course this tiger did with Roy, then he owns it. He's over you, and he will not let it go. Just like a piece of meat, or when they make a kill, you're not going to get that pill. Let me ask you this. You talked about dogs taking nips, and I was a little surprised about how – well, I wasn't surprised with you because you're great. You've been doing it for a long period of time, and you are the Dr. Doolittle. You're the dog whisperer. But when you do have a dog that continually snips, and I would think that if a dog comes in and it's in severe pain, it's probably going to be even worse. Do you ever have to muzzle animals?
We do, and – sometimes it's easy to muzzle an animal. You know, it's not the muzzling that they don't like. So we would never just straight away go straight for a muzzle unless we have a new patient and they're coming from a different practice and we call the practice to get records. And, you know, they either have something on their file or the practice gives us a heads up that they're aggressive or fearful or anxious or whatever. And, you know, you probably want to consider muzzling. So we always are going to give the benefit of the doubt when we see a patient the first time, unless there's some kind of warning from the owner or from the previous practice. And if we do have one that tries to bite, then, you know, at that point, it's best for us, the veterinary professionals, and it's best for the animal, honestly, to be muzzled.
Yeah.
And if you can get the muzzle on safely, that's great. But some animals will still try to bite you as you're putting the muzzle on. And so then at that point, we have to figure out what's going to be best. Do we need a sedative? You know, how will the owner be, or how will the pet be if the owner tries to muzzle the animal? Because maybe they don't. Maybe the pet doesn't see the owner, you know, in the same light it sees us when we're trying to muzzle it. So we do have to from time to time. And it's amazing how when you get that muzzle on, a lot of pets, they will not even try to get away from you once you get the muzzle on. It's almost like in some ways, and that's why I say it's better for the pet too, because in a lot of situations we see that pet go from alligator rolling, thrashing, rolling, you know, jumping around the room, they get the muzzle on and they're a totally different dog. You know, they're a statue. So it's safer for us. It's safer for them too.
Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. If you have any mutt mail you want to send us, we'll get into some of those stories. And one final story we're going to update on. You remember I was talking a couple of weeks ago about pet stocks. Did you buy some?
No, I did not.
Well, Morgan Stanley just announced on Friday they have found out an algorithm that for every 4% increase in pet ownership in this country, it has led to an average of 11% gain in pet spending, which means that all pet stocks have increased 37% since 2020. If you bought a bunch of Chewy stock or any type of stock in PetSmart or anything else, you have made some bank in the last couple of years. It makes sense.
Absolutely, it does. Yep.
All right, let's get into some mutt mail. Again, info@TonyCurryRadio.net, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. You can hear the show every single Monday through Friday, Dark Side of the Pooch at 7 o'clock right here on TKR. Download the Tony Curry Radio app. You're good to go. Great classic rock and roll. The other 157 hours we have outside of our shows, and of course also Tony Curry Radio podcast, wherever you get your podcast, Audioboom, iTunes, Spotify, it's all up there. It's fantastic. And we also, I have a couple other stories I'll get into, but I want to get some mutt mail here because it's great. Nate in Orange Beach says he's part of something called Dog Aging Project. Have you heard of it?
No, I have not.
It's about doggy dementia. He wanted to let us know, and I pulled it up, and it's true, that cognitive issues raise 52% each year for every dog over the age of 10. And I don't think a lot of people, I know that animals, you know, suffer some of the same things that the humans do. I just figure that when dogs get old, they just start forgetting things and they're just on. But doggy dementia is real, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Explain how dangerous it is. I know that dementia in human beings can also be followed by physical attributes and things that could actually kill you off a little earlier than normally if you wouldn't have dementia. It's not just a mind thing or a brain thing. It's a body thing. But how does it affect dogs when they start getting dementia? What can we look for? And are there ways to keep it from happening?
the most common symptoms that you see, in no particular order, is an apparent failure to remain housebroken. So the pets will start to have accidents in the house again.
Okay.
They'll also, and this can be kind of difficult for older pets, but they'll become a little more antisocial and maybe spend more time, you know, what appears to be antisocial behavior. They'll spend time away from the owners or in rooms that they don't normally go in. You'll just find them there by themselves. Hmm. A lot of pets will find a closet and just go in there, or you'll just catch them staring at the walls, yeah. You know, not really doing a whole lot. Those are the main things that you can see, but you'll, and those things are not dangerous for people, you know, that it doesn't put us at risk, but some things that can happen, are a little more problematic for the pet owners or other, you know, people that spend time with the pet owners, because a dog's mentation can change, and mentation just means their demeanor. Because dementia can make pets aggressive, but some other things that can kind of mimic dementia, like brain tumors, those can also change a pet's mentation, and it can take a very laid back pet and make them aggressive or fearful or anxious. And when a pet starts to develop those traits, then they can become a danger, you know, to people, to their owners. So those are the most common things that you see, but usually the mentation change is not incredibly common. You know, it's more of they're going to start peeing and pooping in the house again. They're going to become what appears to be antisocial, spend time in places they don't normally go, kind of stare at the walls, get caught in corners, things like that.
I'm assuming because, you know, we could do MRIs and everything else on our brains and see how Alzheimer's changes a human being. But this is purely circumstantial when it comes to a dog, right? You're just looking at some of the symptoms and then you can kind of make the documentation that this animal's suffering some type of dementia or no? Or is there a blood test or something or no?
There's not a blood test, and it's hard to diagnose because it has to be what's called a diagnosis of exclusion, meaning that you have to exclude a bunch of other things. You know, is it just primary anxiety that's making them act this way? Do they have organ dysfunction? Because that can just cause them to be painful and just act weird. If they have kidney disease or liver disease, if they have a metabolic issue like, you know, diabetes, they're going to be peeing in the house. And there's, Cushing's disease will make them drink a lot and pee a lot. So you have to exclude a lot of other diseases to kind of come to the conclusion that, hey, this may be dementia. And then once you get to that point, a lot of owners are just kind of, you know, tapped out as far as, you know, maybe financially when it comes to running tests, or maybe they just, you know, they're tired of searching because, and I can see why people would feel this way, but if you have a geriatric pet and we've ruled out, you know, big disease processes, and then the only thing left on the table is maybe dementia. And so how are you going to diagnose that? Well, we can refer you to a neurologist, and then, you know, maybe there's something they can do with some imaging, like a CT scan. But maybe even then it's not going to tell us what's going on. And so when you approach a pet owner and you're having this conversation with them, most people say, okay, this pet is 15, 16, 17 years old. I just don't want to go to that length. You know, let's just see what we can do for them. If anything, we've ruled out all these other processes. So, you know, here's the conclusion that we have, and here's what we're going to do.
It's got to be. I mean, I had a mother that had Alzheimer's, and so I know how horrifying this disease is. And animals are here to comfort us, and they are man's best friend, but we're here to comfort them as well. We love having them around. They are supportive. I would think that would be incredibly difficult to have a dog that you've had your entire life if you're 15, 16 years old, and all of a sudden it just starts ignoring you. I mean, but again, as long as it's okay, and it's not hurting itself, there's no reason not to let it live its life out, even if it has dementia, correct?
Oh, sure. Yeah. There's no, if it's still eating and drinking, and, you know, mainly it's that house soiling thing, you know, that is probably the most, difficult thing for the pet owners to deal with because nobody wants their house to get messed up.
Yeah.
So, that's probably the thing that is going to cause some pet owners to, you know, maybe make that quality of life decision, and euthanize, unfortunately. But again, I mean, you got to see where they're coming from. You know?
Dark Side of the Pooch with Dr. Rab Stewart, 205-208-0301. If you're a customer of his, you already know he's the best. If you're not, you should check him out, 208-0301 at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter, the Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Facebook. And, of course, you can listen to Dark Side of the Pooch every single night. Now, 7 o'clock right here on TKR, on the TKR app, and wherever you get your podcast, the Tony Currie Radio Podcast, just Google it, and wherever you listen to your podcast, you're good to go. Tabitha in Denver, I read this email. The first line is, I love my husband very much. I was like, oh no, here we go. I could not wait to read the rest of it. They have a 17-year-old wire fox terrier, and he wants to put it down, and she doesn't. And she started giving her side of the story. Obviously, I don't know the whole side because he wasn't emailing. She did mention the fact they have to pick it up to take it out in the morning, but it doesn't make messes in the house. It's still eating, doesn't appear to be in a lot of pain, but is incredibly forgetful. And she's like, listen, the fact that we have to pick this animal up, it's not overweight, but they have to pick it up just because it's sore. I don't know if they can't move its legs. I'm in a situation. But after 17 years, he wants to euthanize the animal, and she does not. You're super good at this, and I love you for this fact. I've had two animals that I had to put down. One was old, and one had parvo. And I asked you point blank, you know, and I know finances play into this, but what would you do in this particular situation? And you told me, I know some vets will go, I really can't say this is kind of your decision. I'm looking for an answer here. What do you think that someone should do in this particular case, particularly when you're talking about a married couple?
We get this question a lot.
Yeah.
Is it time to put my pet to sleep? And I had a really great colleague when I kind of first started doing this, and I don't know where he got this little tidbit, but it makes so much sense, and so I've adopted it. But when it, you know, it's like you said, you're really looking for something objective when it comes to this, you know, difficult decision. So I tell people that you're looking for one of three things, and if they have any of these three things, then it's probably in the pet's best interest to strongly consider euthanasia. And so those three things are not eating or drinking for about 48 hours. You know, I mean, if they haven't had anything to eat or drink in that time period, then, you know, you want to consider euthanasia. If they don't have the ability to urinate or defecate. So, for example, if they have a mass that is preventing them from having a bowel movement, or they have some functional problem with their urethra where they can't urinate, you know, obviously you can't continue on that way. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's pretty much no question. And then the last one is the inability to get up and down on their own.
Yeah.
So, you know, that this email, it's not, I'm not sure if they just have to pick it up and take it out in the morning and the rest of the day it's fine.
Yeah.
Or if it's something they have to do all the time, because if a pet can't get up and down on its own, then their quality of life is not what it should be. Now, that being said, all of those three things kind of come with the caveat of, have we examined the pet and have we at least talked about what our options are for diagnostics or treatment? Because just because a pet doesn't eat or drink for 2 days, it doesn't mean that it's definitely time to euthanize them. It just means that maybe like it's time to figure out why.
Yeah.
And then if we find something in the blood work or on the x-rays or whatever, then we can try to address those things. Or maybe we find things that can't be addressed, you know? And so at that point, they're not eating, they're not drinking, they're unable to urinate or defecate, or they're unable to get up on their own. And we have either exhausted all options and we can't find the reason why, or we've looked into it and we found the reason why and there's no treatment available, or the treatment is just really expensive and the owner doesn't want to do it.
Yeah.
So those are all things to consider.
He's Dr. Rab Stewart. He does the show every single week, Dark Side of the Pooch. It airs at 7 o'clock right here on TKR, wherever you get your podcast. I'm Tony Curry, brought to you by Ed's Pet World down there in Homewood. They do a fantastic job. About 50-50 now, exotic pets and toys. So go check out Seth, Angie, the entire crew. They do a wonderful job. Let me ask you a personal question. And you've been married, for how long have you been married?
It'll be 11 years in December.
I'm going to assume those 11 years have been just stellar for you, because I know you as a man and as a father and as a husband. Do you give advice when you're not asked? And the reason I go there is if someone's brought an animal in and all the signs are there and you're like, basically it's a Weekend at Bernie's situation, but it's still breathing. And you know, this animal would be much better off being put down, but the family doesn't even think of doing that. Do you ever give advice?
Yes. And yes, the almost 11 years of marriage have been better than I could have ever imagined. You get to a point where it's like, I'm so fortunate that I have this person next to me that I can do things with. You know, I have this like anxiety of going and doing this thing. Well, you know, if your spouse is with you, it becomes, you know, less that way. It becomes mm-hmm. fun. So anyway, I'll just give that. So yeah, the answer to your question is yes. And mainly it's for a medical, like, okay. So if someone comes in and their dog or cat is in bad shape, I need them to know that I know that their pet's in bad shape, because the last thing I want to do is, you know, them go home and the pet just, you know, expires on its own.
Yeah.
And for me, that's my nightmare. You know, a dog comes in, and whether it's even sick or not sick, you know, it comes in for a wellness visit, and then for some reason 3 weeks later it dies, mm-hmm. you know, or you have a really sick one that comes in. So if we have to kind of approach the subject of euthanasia, I'll usually say, look, you know, your pet is not doing well at all. So I need you to know that it's a possibility that, I mean, in the next very short period of time, your pet could die.
Yeah.
So we either need to consider trying to figure out why and addressing it, or you need to think about euthanasia. But again, we're not, you know, we can only make recommendations. We don't force anybody's hand on things like this. Yeah. I mean, it's the owner's decision, but they need to know what the prognosis and what the short-term or long-term survival odds are, just so we're not, you know, on the hook for, well, you know, I went in and they didn't tell me how sick he or she was, and now they're gone.
All right. info@tonycurryradio.net. Your mutt mail questions, emails, we'll get to as many as we can. info@tonycurryradio.net. Bert and Hoover, a great question here. How can I tell if my dog has seizures? I did have a wire fox terrier that did all the things you were mentioning that was dementia oriented, but we found out it was having seizures. It would, first of all, it would get really angry at really strange things. It would also stare into corners and kind of twitch its head a little bit. What causes seizures in dogs? How do you look for seizures in dogs? And can you keep seizures from happening in dogs?
Seizures can be pretty hard to diagnose, believe it or not. But and the reason why is because there's another symptom called syncope, which is just basically fainting. And for a pet owner, and even for a veterinary professional, sometimes it can be really difficult to figure out which is which. So seizures happen because the electrical activity in the brain goes unchecked. And when you have these basically cutoffs to keep the electrical activity in the brain where it should be, when those fail and the brain goes haywire, then the body is going to follow. So typically with seizures, they become rigid. They lay down on their side. They will lose their bladder or bowels. And there's like a period before the seizure where they're acting a little bit strange, and that can last, you know, any length of time basically. And then there's a period after the seizure where they're acting funny, like maybe walking like they're a little drunk or just kind of out of it. There is treatment depending on what it is. Epilepsy is really common in dogs, and most of the time that's going to hit in between years 4 to 8 of years of age. And there's medication you can put them on that can help.
Is that a pre-genetic type of thing, or is it just something? I mean, is there anything that causes that?
Or is it it could be genetic, but you know, it's hard to know because. Yeah. you know, you're not really keeping track of family trees too much once they, you know, some people just won't contact a breeder, you know, and say, hey, I got my dog from you 8 years ago and it's having seizures now. You know, most people, they just don't do that. So it can be hard to know. But brain tumors can cause seizures. So that's a, you know, that's a different ball of wax. That's something that, you know, an anti-seizure drug like phenobarbital is not going to do much for seizures that are being caused by a brain tumor. But so syncope, the way that you can maybe differentiate between the two. So syncope is not a brain thing. It's a cardiovascular thing. And they won't act weird before or after the syncopal episode, which again is basically fainting because the body is not pumping blood efficiently, or it's not pumping oxygen rich blood efficiently. So the body just has to lay down. Yeah. So that the circulation, you know, improves. So that's a heart or circulatory issue. So they won't act weird before or after. Usually this syncope is during an episode of activity, whereas seizures, believe it or not, they happen more when the dog is at rest. And with syncope, they won't lose their bowels or bladder. So, but again, you can see, I mean, it can be kind of hard for a pet owner to know, well, I can't make heads or tails of this. I'm not sure what's going on because the symptoms are similar.
All right. There he is, Dr. Rab Stewart. We're up against it, but I did want to mention one more story that I thought was really interesting. Of course, our big show here, Dark Side of the Pooch, is brought to you by Ed's Pet World. Ed's Pet World does it all, man. They have exotic pets. They got chinchillas. They got tarantulas. They got mice. They got birds that sing. They got rabbits. I mean, they got everything. If you're looking for that strange exotic pet, and they'll make sure that you know how to take care of it, they're fantastic. Ed's Pet World. Check them out there, Seth and Angie, the entire crew. And of course, he's also got a great toy closet down there, man. This place is perfect for kids. Kids are going to love to walk. I go down there about 2 or 3 days a week just to walk around and clear my brain a little bit. He's got unboxed toys. He's got a watch. He's got vintage toys, Star Wars stuff, you name it. If you want to buy, sell, and trade, check out Ed's Pet World. It's fantastic. Dolly Parton has opened a brand new fashion line for dogs. It's canine collections with pink accessories, her coated wigs, cowboy hats, Dolly's costumes complete with a guitar and high heel chew toys and more on Amazon. Do you know what's called?
Oh, man. I have no idea.
Doggy Parton.
Oh, yeah,
Doggy Parton.
Good.
Check out
that's
Doggy
good.
Parton on Amazon. It just opened up a couple weeks ago. Check it out, and you're going to love it. And just as I finish up the show, all my dogs are now in the studio, so it's time to go. Dr. Rab, thank you so much, man. I appreciate you.
See you next week, buddy.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.